Good evening and welcome to a special edition of Nowhere to Run. We're going to play a conversation I just had with my friend Cindy, who is a researcher and a blogger and a friend, and she's just got a lot of insight in it. And she is somebody who diligently researches what she's led to and finds a lot of things that everybody misses. So, but it's great to just hear. The conversation was totally unprepared, unscripted, no really questions prepared. So I think that it's all over the place, but I think that's just how it can be used, basically, to lead to different insights that we wouldn't have come up on our own, I don't think. So there's probably something in here for everybody if you just listen long enough. So we'll get right into that. I want to say you're probably listening to the first Nowhere to Run episode in a long time with decent sound quality. It's been after months of plaguing. I think we finally have it sort of figured out. I had to end up scrapping two computers, essentially, sort of, to get to back to the computer that I started doing the shows with. And hopefully we can get this figured out on a regular basis. But for now, enough of that. We'll get right into the conversation. Thanks for tuning in. You can go to our website where I'll link Cindy's blog. And in the show notes, the website is conspiracyclothes.com/nowheretorun and nowheretorun.podomatic.com. Cindy's website is Cindy K, Cindy K, spell out K, K-A-Y, cindyk.wordpress.com, cindyk.wordpress.com. I think I need to preface what she's talking about here because of the way I did the edit. She's talking about George Washington and something she noticed in a prophecy that apparently he said he had at Valley Forge. I don't think I got it then, but I think I get it now in retrospect. But anyway, here she is.
Okay, well, he apparently had a vision while he was at Valley Forge that gave the prophetic overlay of the United States. And a lot of patriots look to his prophecy when they're preaching about our role in the end times and how the United States is always going to stand and so forth and so on. And it's bothered me more and more because we have seen more and more the role that the country's playing in the last days, and that we are the beast and we are Babylon, and we're being used in that way right now in literal Babylon. So anyway, I pulled it up today on my computer, and something really stood out to me for the very first time that I just had never seen before. And it was the very last part of Washington's prophecy. And this is what he says. He says, "Then once more I beheld the villages, towns, and cities springing up where I had seen them before, while the bright angel planting the azure standard he had brought in the midst of them cried with a loud voice, 'While the stars remain and the heavens send down dew upon the earth, so long shall the Union stand.' And taking from his brow the crown on which was blazoned the word Union, he placed it on the standard, while the people kneeling down said, 'Amen.'" Chris, when I read this today, chills went down my spine because for the first time I saw two things here. One of them was where it says, "I planted the azure standard." The word azure means blue. It's the same color blue as the United Nations flag, and it's also the same color blue that the Masons use. When you picture this guy, this angelic being, taking off his crown and laying it on this blue flag, what picture do you have? You have that picture of the UN flag with the crowning wreath on it. And then what's even worse is the people knelt down in front of it and said, "Amen." And immediately what came to my mind was these people bowing down to the image of a beast or the image of the beast. And I had never in my life seen it before. I have seen this on, I don't know, half a dozen prophecy sites as kind of a rallying point for patriots. And I guess for the first time I realized that the patriot movement that we have going on may be leading us down a very bad path. That our patriotism is not to be to the country, but rather to the Lord. And that the Lord's going to use the United States, but that our allegiance cannot be to the United States, if I'm making sense here. Whenever I pass by a church and I see the American flag flying in front of a church over the Christian flag, that's always bothered me.
Right.
Does this make sense to you at all?
Yeah, I think so. I need to probably go back a little bit. And now I just was, when you're reading the quote, I guess it sounded like at first he was saying that the union is contingent. Was it that the union was contingent on the standard of people being knelt down? That's saying it will stand.
I am not sure.
Maybe you could, if you could read that to me, that last part again, so I could.
It says, "And taking from his brow the crown on which was blazoned the word union, he placed it upon the standard, while the people kneeling down said, 'Amen.'"
Okay. He placed it upon the standard?
He placed it upon the standard.
What do you think? What
we've already identified that the standard is Azure, A-Z-U-R-E.
Hmm. Okay.
You might want to bring it up and read it. It's, and just see what your take on it is, because I think that a lot of patriots are going to start rising up, which, you know, the Lord tells us, you live by the sword, you're going to die by the sword. He tells us not to do that. We're not to kill. And if he has brought the church into this time for purification, it's going to be to identify his people. I know I'm all over the place here, but this is just in the last, like, 20 minutes that I've been reading that I saw some of this that I had never seen. Here's an example. Jonah. Jonah was sent to Nineveh, and he was sent to Nineveh to prophesy, and he ran to the opposite end of the world. And he ran because he was a patriot. He ran because he knew that several other prophets that were living at the same time had said Nineveh is going to overtake Israel and subjugate it. And he knew this. And so he ran rather than obeying the Lord. In other words, his patriotism was over his obedience to the Lord. And God found him, sent it to Nineveh. Sure enough, Nineveh did ask forgiveness from their sins. They were indeed destroyed later on, but first God used Nineveh to judge Israel. In other words, he tells Jonah, look, I know you love Israel, I know you're a patriot, but I have told you to go to these people and to speak to them. And Jonah's first inclination, rather than obedience to the Lord, was his patriotism to his country. And I guess what I'm saying is the Lord wants our first allegiance to be to him and his word,
right,
and not patriotism to a country that we all have seen is now under subjugation to the occult, basically.
Right. And I think that probably one of the things that it would be a hard pill to swallow would have to have people understand what exactly it is that we're being patriotic about. You know, well, mm-hmm. We're not being patriotic about the government. We can all pretty much be clear to that. And the
and the
flag, and, you know, is a symbol of something. What is a symbol of? You know, is it a symbol mm-hmm. of the government? No. I mean, is it a symbol of the people? If you're going to be patriotic about something, let's just like break it down to its, you know, the most, you know, reducible number here. Is it the landmass? You know, is it the geographical location? Does it stop right at San Diego? And, you know, I guess what I'm trying to say is that I think there's just misplaced fervor in it. I don't know. It's pretty obvious to me, I think, that there is a lot of that, you know, God above country, as opposed to without it, we wouldn't. Without God, we wouldn't have this freedom anyway. It was a gift to those people, I think, that were running from, you know, persecution. This freedom was such a gift, but like anything else, we took it for granted and we didn't realize what we had, whose fault that was, I don't really know. But the freedom of all that stuff was, you know, a gift. And I think that in a way, the judgment of God is a really a benevolent thing, in that if he takes it away, what does he take away? If he takes away our cars and our things that we depend on and our money and everything that we try to, you know, to protect ourselves with and say, I don't need God because I have this and I have this, and we're building all this stuff around him, by reducing that down to you don't have anything anymore, gets you right back to where you can make a decision to ask him for your provisions, you know, and by taking it away, he's doing the greatest favor ever, you know, by taking it away and getting you like a child again, saying, are you going to blame me for taking away your SUV and your house, or are you going to now embrace me and ask me to provide for you the things that you really need, you know, and give everybody that option? So I think when all this crash hits, economic and elsewhere, another thing, I don't know, about that, I wanted to clarify what you mean by America being Babylon. I think that obviously
that all the religions of the world now reside here in our country. They're all represented here. They're all represented in our country. And that I think that the leadership of the mainline churches are going to, and we've seen stories all over the web about going to the United Nations to meet with them. And I'm going to throw out something that's really wild here. Okay, and you can just chew on it. You may not want to believe it or not, but let me just throw this to you.
Okay.
Right now, the church is prepared for a certain progression of events to happen. In other words, we've been studying prophecy, and we are looking for a certain progression of events to happen. And this progression of events that we're waiting to happen will kind of alert us to, okay, this has happened, now we know. But I'm going to throw this out to you. There may be, along with that progression of events, a parallel progression of events. And Chris, this just occurred to me like 10 minutes ago because I really haven't hashed it out all that much. We're all waiting for some sort of a peace treaty to be signed between a leadership entity and Israel that's going to last 7 years. Let me throw this out to you. There may also be another treaty signed between leaders of the denominations in our country and someone. There may be, in other words, we cannot assume that we know what's going to happen, and so when we see it, we know what's happening, because I think that things are going to unravel for us, or the scroll is going to unravel for us as time goes on. If I can backtrack just a minute to something you said about when we don't have anything. You know, when Israel came out of Egypt, God allowed them to take everything they could carry with them. They brought gold, they brought silver, they brought the riches of Egypt with them, and yet 3 years out in the 3 days out in the desert, they have nothing to eat and nothing to drink. In other words, all the stuff they brought did them no good. In fact, later on, they melted down all the riches and made a golden calf out of it. So I think you're absolutely right. I think that the body is going to be purified when we have to rely on the Lord for all of our provisions instead of on ourselves or our government. That's when the rubber meets the road, and we're going to find out who's who. It's going to be a process of self-examination as well. We're going to be introspectively taking a look at our own characters and trying to figure out, who am I, what do I believe? My husband had dinner last week with a group of Christians and was throwing out some things to them, and every single one of them said, well, when the mark comes along, I won't take it, and besides, I don't have to worry, I'm going to be raptured out of here anyway.
Right.
And, you know, I'm at the front of the line with the whole get me out of here, but we can't count on it. And if you can't recognize, and by the way, the people that he was talking to had not seen anything that's happened in the last 7 years to the country. They just hadn't seen it until I pointed it out to them. Well, if you are unable right now, when you have everything you need to recognize what's happening, how in the world, when everything's been taken away from you, are you going to recognize what's going on? You know what I mean? If you can't walk the walk when you have everything you need right now, how in the world do you think you're going to do it when you have nothing left?
Right.
It's going to be difficult.
It's so hard. It's like that with everything. It seems like in the midst of these trials, like I was noticing something yesterday. It felt like I was just being really oppressed on a lot of issues, a lot of really technical things, just all kinds of things going wrong. But it was in that trouble and trials and things going wrong and falling apart that it was like they weren't. It was like if I kept faithful in it and then kept praying for, you know, God's provision, God was like there more than usual. He was ready to like answer the prayers and fix the things. And it was like more than normal. He was fixing and providing for me in the midst of this, and to me, obvious attack. But it could very well, I mean, some of those things were just so close to getting me to be like, oh, great, another thing, God, thanks, you know, and like that just little mental rejection, you know. And it could have gone that way unless you kept being faithful even in the midst of it. And it's like, I do think that in something goes wrong like in somebody's life, there is always that 50-50 chance that they're either going to blame God or embrace him, you know. But
right.
But having everything just be hunky-dory, this is the slow path to you know, destruction. I mean, because then you will inevitably take it for granted. It's just our nature, and just it's easy to do. Very rarely do people just have everything and just thank God every day for it.
Right. And we, rather than digging into the Word ourselves, we're trusting our pastors. And when I say we, I'm talking about nominal Christianity throughout our country, throughout the world, is trusting the pastors to tell them what to understand. And Chris, for the first time today, I understood what I was reading when they talk about separating the sheep from the goats at the end. And in my mind, I always, and I don't know if you knew this or not, I didn't know what I'm about to tell you. I always, in my mind, saw a great big herd of a bunch of sheep and a bunch of goats mixed together. And that's when they walk in front of the shepherd, he kind of, okay, you're a sheep, you go to the right, you're a goat, you go to the left, you know. Well, I kind of did some studying on what the whole goat thing is about, and these goats are he-goats. And apparently, they would have a couple of these he-goats lead the sheep when the sheep were about to be slaughtered, because the sheep would follow the he-goats. So the whole separation of the sheep and the goats is the leadership of the sheep are going to be separated for leading them into destruction.
Well, I think that you're right. Although, I mean, we're talking about, again, like nominal Christianity, but obviously...
Exactly.
But, you know, there are the Holy Spirit can do anything that it wants to. And so, you know, at the same time, there are those churches which are doing the Lord's work and are being blessed, and just millions of people, millions are, you know, joining these congregations. Every church is an evil, but, you know, at the same time, there is this majority situation going on. And I think maybe it had something to do with signing some contracts. You know, I think that God pays attention to those kind of things. But again, the Holy Spirit has an odd way of bringing everybody to the same conclusions that have never talked to each other all across the world. You know, it's like, hey, you know, I've come to the same conclusions. You know,
it's the most amazing thing, isn't it, when you think of something and wonder to yourself, I wonder if I'm the first one that's ever seen it, and within a day or two, you either read it or hear it from someone else, and it gives confirmation to what you've been thinking about.
Right. Let me pause and say that we're talking with Cindy and her blog. Do you have anywhere? I guess I saw you put another one up, so I might as well mention the cindyk.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of good stuff going there and whatnot. I was just, let's see, what I wanted to talk. Oh, yeah, I wanted to go back just a little bit to what you were saying at the beginning. And it does seem like that this whole patriot movement is definitely becoming split down the middle with those that are going one way and those that are going the other way. And it's really the occult way. I mean, I hate to just generalize it because I know that most people just see that and say, oh, well, you just don't understand. But I think that it's just amazing how we have this truth being infiltrated by people that have a very common theme. And we need to just take notice of it. But it seems like there's such a blindness. And the blindness is what's so perplexing to me. It's such a event in and of itself that I'm like, wow, this is a real faith, you know, that people are illogically clinging to without anything or even claiming to have any kind of fact. It's like, well, you know, I don't know. It's becoming obvious.
It is becoming obvious. And the more evil you see, the more you hold fast to the beliefs you have and to things that we don't see, that we know are true. And it's almost comical. You know, some of the things that I see in the news with NASA and, you know, the code names they use for things, when I see it, my first reaction usually is, are you even kidding me? You know, this new Air Force bomb that they came out, codenamed BLU-122, I mean, when I first saw that, I thought, well, that's amazing. They use blue, which is the UN and the Masonic color, and they call it the 122, and it's not until I get to the end of the article when I see it's called the Portal Defense System. How bizarre is that?
Right.
You know, it's almost like an in-your-face, here we are, how can we be more obnoxious? It's kind of like waving a red flag in front of a bull, daring you to do anything about it. And I think what's happening is exactly right. You have two groups of people seeing it, but they're seeing it in two completely different ways. And we're instructed to see it and yet keep our focus on the Word of God and His promises. Well, you have another group seeing it going off in a completely different direction, and it's like a trap is being laid for them, and they're going to be sucked right into it and not realize it until they're in it.
Well, let's talk about that for people that haven't seen it yet or haven't even thought about it. Let's talk about some of the stuff that happened with the lunar eclipse and all that, what NASA did. Just give everybody a brief overview so they know that this was like a obvious ritual.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if a brief overview is possible.
Where do I even begin? Well, first of all, NASA is completely occultic, and I vividly remember that I was, I think, like 13 years old when Apollo landed. And I can remember at the time, as a 13-year-old kid, thinking, why in the world did we name our space program to go to Mars, to go to the moon, Apollo? That just seemed like a very bizarre thing to me, that is a quote-unquote Christian country, we chose the name of the God of the Abyss for our moonshot. And it seems as if they use names and numbers constantly to put out some sort of a message. Here we are. This shoot down of whatever the heck it was, and who knows what it was. You know, who knows what it was? Who can you believe? But apparently, they shot it down at the time of this eclipse, which, by the way, we won't see it again for another 7 years, which comes on the heel of some really significant astrological signs in the heavens. And by that, I don't mean the occultic astrological. I mean signs in the heavens that we've had over the past 6 months that are major signs that seem to have caught astronomers completely off guard. I think that it really was the opening shot of something to come in the next 7 years. This last shot with Atlantis, I'm not even going to go into Atlantis, you know. It's completely occultic. But the mission was called STS-122. The launch time was 2:45 p.m. Eastern time, which 2, 4, and 5 add to 11. The landing time was 9:57. I'm not sure what time it landed. I know that was a projected landing time. Had it been a minute off, it would have landed at 9:58, which would have added to 22, and I'm not sure if it did or not. The mission was for 11 days. And this was really kind of weird. The shuttle, whenever you look at the new missions going up, go to the NASA site and click on a picture of the mission patch, because invariably the mission patch has all kinds of occultic symbolism on it. And when I clicked on the picture of the mission patch for this one, the shuttle is pictured traveling from west to east. And they go on and on, blah, 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 with the, you know, explanation of why it's traveling west to east, which is backward, but this is Masonic. The Masons believe that their career moves from the west to the east, and the horizontal lines that the Masons laid out in Washington, D.C., were also laid out from the west to the east. So it's right out there. I mean, NASA does nothing to hide the occultic links that they have, because you can just go to the site and look up all kinds of information. It's going to be right there. And apparently the next two NASA projects are projected to be Project Orion and Project Ares. So they're continuing with the whole occultic line here that they started with at the onset with, what was the first one? Project Gemini, I guess.
Well, it's I mean, for any new listeners, I mean, it's probably good to look into something called Project Paperclip or Operation Paperclip, where the Nazis were pretty much, the Nazi rocket scientists were taken out of World War II after the end of the war, were distributed by the CIA, predecessor to the CIA, and became NASA, which is coincidence that it's called NASA in the first place, what being Nazi and all that. One thing I kept sticking in my mind, about the George Washington thing, what were you saying that the implications were? Were you saying that the angel would be, was it an occultic type fallen angel, or what was your view?
What kind of got me upset was when I saw the people bowing down in front of the standard and saying in front of the standard, amen. We're not to bow down in front of a standard, period. That stuck out at me for the very first time. Chris, I've read this prophecy, I can't even tell you how many times, and somehow for the first time today when I looked it up, that jumped out at me.
But what is the, I've never even heard about it. Does the rest of it jive with, you know, with what you would think, or is it just
something? The rest of it jives with what you would think. That's what's amazing. But you know what? That's what we see time and time again. You see a whole lot of truth. You know, you all have talked about it with Fitchin and so forth. You see a lot of truth, and then in that truth you have the little hook that's the lie.
Right.
And it's the little hook that's all it takes. So the entire prophecy, and I got this at a site called Prophecy Truth, and I think I just Googled George Washington's prophecy, and it came right up for me. So the entire thing, this is great, blah, 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 and then you get to the very end of it, and you see them plant this Azure standard, put the crown on it, and people bow down to the Azure standard and say amen. And that's, for the first time, I saw something that I thought was off.
Right.
You know, the entire prophecy is fine, and then I got to that, and I thought, wow, that doesn't make sense, because God's people would not bow down to another standard.
Right. Well, is it could be assumed that the standard was, could they explain that away as that being God, or the standard being Jesus or something like that?
Very well could be. Take a look at it and see what you think. I could be completely wrong. I'm throwing this out. I'm always willing to say I was wrong about something and I'm crazy. That's fine. I just happened to see this for the first time, and I felt strongly that I should say something about it.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Cool. Well, what else has been? What else have you been thinking about lately, just in general? Has anything just been?
I'll tell you. This whole wheat shortage thing, and I blogged about it at my blog about the 10 weeks until we're out of wheat stores, and there was a news article I saw today online. This is apparently how bad it's getting in China. The Chinese are trying to find refuge by crossing over into North Korea for food. Now, anybody that knows the situation of food in North Korea would have to say to themselves, okay, you're going to North Korea for food? Things are really bad where you are. And apparently China is importing all the wheat we have. You know, we've turned over all of our fields to biofuel and so forth. But the crux of this is really not wheat as in the wheat that we're going to need to eat. I think that we have had a famine of the Word of God. I think that we have had too many people really not get the Word in themselves so that when we're in the wilderness, they'll have nothing to draw on. Now, a lot of people have used the last 7 years we've had to wake up and feed on it. They need to use the next several months to really get in the Word, because unless it's really a part of who you are, you're going to have nothing to draw on. Because, Chris, I really believe that when the rapture occurs, how it occurs, if it's at the beginning, if it's at the end, wherever it is, in spite of all of it, we're going to have to depend on our faith in miracles to survive. We're going to have to depend on that. And I think that the headlines that I saw about the wheat shortages really are all about the church and the wheat. And this is something else that I turned back to Genesis again for the story about Joseph. And, you know, Joseph had 7 years to prepare. He had 7 years to bring in the wheat. And then he had 7 years of famine. And I saw a couple things I hadn't seen the first time I read through the story. Is it okay if I share that with you real quickly?
Sure.
Okay. Well, first of all, you have the early history of Joseph when he first came into Egypt, and he's in prison, and he has the cupbearer and the baker in prison with him, and they tell him his dreams, and he tells the cupbearer, you're going to be restored to your former position at the side of the king, and he says to the baker, you're going to be killed. And when I was studying this several months ago, I saw for the first time the cup and the bread being a picture of the church, of communion, the bread and the wine. And I had never seen that before, and I was trying to figure out what it meant, and I thought, well, maybe the cupbearer is right next to the king. He's in his presence all the time. The king knows him. He knows the king. The baker's in another part of the house. Perhaps he's put to death because he doesn't really know the king. The king doesn't really know him. I mean, I've been trying to sort this out now. I mean, I'll mull something over and over and over. And again today, I went back and read it again, and I was thinking more and more about the baker, and why is the baker put to death, and what is it that the baker does? Well, the baker makes bread, and what does he make bread with? He makes bread with yeast, and why does he use yeast? And I know I'm rambling here, but I'm going to get to the point. Yeast makes the bread taste good. We put yeast in bread to make it rise and make it nice and fluffy. But God's bread has no yeast in it. It's flat and tasteless. And it's not easy to take in. That's the bread we're supposed to be eating. I think that maybe it was a picture of perhaps teaching going out that is easy to listen to, easy to swallow, but not necessarily true. And that the people that call themselves God's people, represented by the cupbearer and the baker, you have the cupbearer that's at the side of the king, and you have the baker that's been feeding the people bread, but it's fluffy bread that's full of yeast. and easy to swallow, but not necessarily truth. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
In other words, it's not unleavened bread that the baker has been feeding them. And then this. In chapter 47 of Genesis, he's talking about the fact that the people could no longer even pay for the food in the last 7 years of the famine that Joseph was ruling. And so Joseph said, okay, fine, what you do is you sell the Pharaoh your land, and I'll give you food. And in that way, the people were able to eat, but they gave up everything they had to the government. But there's a really interesting line here. Genesis 47, verse 22, listen to this, it said, only the land of the priests bought he not, for the priests had a portion assigned them of Pharaoh, and did not eat their portion which Pharaoh gave them, wherefore they sold not their land. The religious leaders didn't have to give up anything. They were fine. But the people lost everything in that famine.
So what's translate for us?
I think that perhaps a lot of the religious leadership throughout the world during the tribulation may not recognize the tribulation that they're in at all, because they will not have lost anything. The people will have lost everything. The church, the body, will have lost everything, but the religious leadership of the world won't lose anything, because they will have aligned themselves with the governing structure.
Right. Targeted for provision by the wrong side.
Exactly. Exactly.
Interesting.
And I found something else. I was trying to try to find confirmation of this, and I turned to Psalms. And I've kind of been following Psalms ever since I read a book by J.R. Church years ago called Prophecy in the Psalms, where he explains that Psalms seem to follow our century. And I turned to Psalm 108, and the first part of it talks about, Lord, come back and save your people and rescue us. And as you called me, I was just getting to verse 7. And verse 7 says, God has spoken in his holiness. I will rejoice. I will divide Shechem and mete out the valley of Succoth. And I know that sounds like a really boring verse that can't possibly mean anything. But I decided, okay, I'm going to try to figure out what the heck that means. And so I looked up Shechem to find out what it means. And I was amazed. Shechem means, hold on just a second. The root word of Shechem means shoulder. And then they referred me to this, Isaiah 9:5. The government shall be upon his shoulders. And I was also referred to this scripture, Isaiah 22:22. I will lay the key of the house of David upon his shoulder. So verse 7 seems to refer to the fact that God is going to divide up the government. And then it says, and net out the valley of Succoth. And so I looked up Succoth. That's as far as I got when you called. Succoth was the first stopping point of the Jews when they left Egypt. I think this year is going to be a really pivotal year. I mean, I haven't gotten through the rest of this yet, but I really believe that this year and what we've seen so far, I think we're going to see something major happen with our government, with the governments throughout the world, and I think that the Lord is going to bring the church out of Egypt this year, and we're going to be in the wilderness somehow, and we're going to go through a lot of trial.
Right. And whether or not it's this year or next year or the next year after that, it's really, really soon. I mean, I think everybody
has
this
shadow of what's to come. Exactly.
It's everybody is feeling it. Even if the secular version of history occurs, then there's going to be ostracizing of people that won't go with this new world system. I mean,
right.
Even if you don't, I mean, even if you were just a regular patriot that didn't believe anything, you know, about what we're talking about, I mean, you're going to be an outcast here when all this hits the fan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's just a short event away from those people not being able to work or buy or sell or anything. And in fact, being, you know, have all this propaganda machine told all the people that are quote unquote asleep that the other people are the enemy, and then have everybody in the world looking for you, you know, because you wouldn't go along with the Babylon system. You wouldn't bow down to the golden, you know, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I really do feel like that very strongly. That's one of the things that one thing that hit me strongly yesterday was somebody kind of providentially just, you know, almost, I don't know how serious they were, but they really did have, their brother really had a problem. They asked, essentially, if knew anybody that could do an exorcism,
oh my gosh.
And I was like, well, and I got to talking, and we just started talking about the situation, and I realized, you know, the initial feeling was like fear, like, oh man, I know that this is, you know, I'm gonna have to go do this. And I kept thinking that then after that, it started kind of slowly getting in my head that this was. That was okay, that it wasn't a bad thing, that it was a compassionate ministry, and I'll do it. But that me and my girlfriend, and I talked to her about it, and one of the things that I'm excited about it in a way is that when I started running over it in my head and started really understanding that, you know, the implications and how it all worked, what the main thing that it did was it made me desire to get rid of those few sins like that I have in my life that I know about, you know, I want to totally
mm-hmm.
wipe them out. I want to just snuff them out completely. I've been letting them linger for a little too long. Let's just stomp them out, get rid of them, you know, because in the face of that, if you're going to go, if you have that in your future, you're going to go have to deal with a 1,000-year-old, you know, entity that's bent on destruction that, you know, there's no room for error there. So I guess what I'm saying is that what I realized was, is that if you're aware of the direness of the situation, that this stuff is really real, and you were to do that, you were to clean your vessel, as it were, to be more fully, I guess what the word I'm looking for, to have God dwell in you more perfectly, then what would happen in that case would be that you would do it essentially out of fear. But what would happen after that is that God would be able to work with you in such a way that you would never want to go back. You would understand why this is what he was saying, that for all of us to just to live like that, not because he wants to punish you if you don't, but because he can make if you just a lot of people, I guess what I'm saying is that they need to be scared straight, rather. And then if they could do that, then at that point when he can use you, once you're straight, then you would never want to go back. You would understand the whole reason for the whole system. And it's not about punishment. It's not about that. It's not about anything. He was just telling you how to do it, you know. Go ahead.
That has been the biggest change in me. And it's like knowing that I've been a Christian all of my life, and yet looking back over the last 3 years and realizing for the first time it's painful to sin just because I can't stand to it. You know, it was, okay, there was a time in my life where you can sin thinking that at the same time, well, I'll just ask forgiveness later on, you know, I'll just ask forgiveness, you know, I'll just get right with God. You know, this is just like a little blip in the road, and, you know, I can make it better later on, and he'll forgive me and so forth and so on. But when you really get into it and realize what's going on, he'll want to, and you don't want to not because you're fearful anymore. You don't want to because you realize how serious this is, how much you love him, and how you can't be used by him if you continue in it. You know, it's like if I do something deliberately, I know, okay, I've screwed up myself, but more than that, I can't be used because I've done that. I mean, you know what I mean? I've failed myself, and I've failed God too.
Exactly.
It's just a completely different walk than it was 10 years ago. It's just a completely different walk.
And what's so amazing is that it's not, I think people would hear that and say, well, you know, I don't want to be used, you know. But what the beautiful part about our God is that in being used, he's also very giving in his provisions. He's made all these things available. These laws that you've been told are big, mean laws from a big, bad, mean God are really mm-hmm. ways for him to bless you and bless your life and give you all the things. You know, these people, these patriarchs in the Bible were not, you know, poor people. They were, you know, and just, I think he gave certain things like the Sabbath and like tithing as means for you to be faithful in order for him to bless you in those ways. Like financially speaking, I think if you keep the Sabbath and I mean, this is personal opinion, and tithe, then that's his doorway to keep your stores full to the brim, you know? And
right.
So all this stuff is yes, it's to be used, but and I know being outside of this looking in, it's hard to see the joy of being used and the joys of following his laws because it's foreign sounding until you understand that's and this happens through I guess just a period of time and as you clean up the vessel and as he slowly gets more can I don't know if that's a proper biblical way to say it, that he's dwelling more perfectly, because I would say that he would be dwelling with a new Christian who still has a lot of issues. I don't know if it would be the same as somebody that has taken care of a lot of those issues and is but I don't think it's about this guy sins a little more than this guy and then so on and so forth.
I think that he does draw us to him because, I'll tell you my story. For 2 years, I prayed, something's going on. I don't know what's going on. Something's going on. I know it is. And I would walk every morning, and then the entire time I'd be walking, I'd be praying, Lord, show me what it is. I know something's happening. I can feel it. I know you're about to come. I don't know what it is. I don't have a clue. Show me what's happening. Show me what's happening. Show me what's happening. Well, Chris, I've never used a computer. I'm a book reader. I've always loved books. I've read voraciously all my life. I broke my leg. And when I broke my leg, I could not walk at all for about 2 months. And so my husband bought me a laptop computer because I couldn't get up and down and up and down getting books all day long. You know, this way I could sit down and go. And that's when going from site to site, Googling, it was just how it is when you first realize what's happening and you can't believe it and you keep digging deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper. And I realized what was going on, but it took his goodness to break my leg for me to go out and get the computer and go on it and read about it. But before he made it possible, I had been through 2 years of begging him, tell me what's going on, and I wouldn't let go. I had to know. I just wouldn't let go. And he figured out a way to do it for me. And I think he figures out a way for every one of us to get it to us once we chase him for it and say, I want to know. I want to know.
Exactly. And that, I think that the coming, quote, judgment is because God's economy is perfect. And he knows the hearts of his people, and he doesn't wish any of them to perish. And so he must take away in order for them to see the only thing that matters. You know,
right.
There are some people that cannot ever get to him as life presently is and will continue to be, that will perish forever if he doesn't do something. It's because of his economy being perfect. And a lot of people will be led to him because of the events of the last few years and all the things that are happening in the beginning of all this stuff and him just drawing people near to him. But then there are those, and then there's a large number of people that can be saved just by taking it away.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think judgment is really a benevolent thing in some cases, but in some cases it's deserved. But I would say that I don't know. I just, one thing I've really realized lately is that he really, really rocks, and his perfection is in everything. He's like, everything is so well thought out.
I know. It's really reassuring, isn't it?
It is.
Because right now, while we have everything that we need, he's taking care of the little things, like he's confirming thoughts that we have, or confirming things that we see in the Word, or maybe you'll have something that's confirmed by somebody that's not even part of the church. You know, my husband had a really interesting thing happen to him a couple of weeks ago. He meets with the public a lot, and has had friends for years and years and years, and there's one particular friend that he has who is in a very high position in law enforcement. And my husband is really cool about throwing out things, you know, like throwing out a little fishing line and see if there's anything there to, you know, say something about things.
Right.
And so he's talking to this gentleman, and he threw out, you know, this is really bizarre, some of the decisions that the government seems to be making. And Jeff told me the story, and he said, Cindy, this man's entire countenance toward me changed. I've known the man for over 20 years, and his face became like stony. His eyes narrowed at me, and he said, what do you mean? And Jeff said, I immediately knew I needed to back off, and I did. But he said it was really kind of frightening to see the change in this man's demeanor immediately when I mentioned something about the government. And he said, I just didn't go there again, but I could see in his eyes maybe what's ahead for us.
Yeah.
It was really a frightening thing to see.
I got to tell you, I've been really, really feeling that a lot in the last few maybe weeks, that you really can't blame some people, because there, if you looked at the undercurrent of what's being told to everybody that's diligent, newspaper and CNN watchers and Fox News and the rest of it, you know, radio and all that stuff, if you just look at the constant pushing and you know, the brainwashing, I guess, is the theme is to be that person, to have that sentiment if you're paying attention to what their propaganda. And, you know, there's not a lot of hours left in the day, and if you're spending those hours, you know, sucking on the propaganda machine, you know, you're going to become that person. Now, on the other side, and that's going to raise the division of people that are, and it's rooted, I believe, in pride. Those people, like that guy, probably believes he knows so much more because he spends all his time paying attention to the Wall Street. He reads the Wall Street Journal and this and that, mm-hmm. you know, whatever. And it's rooted in, I know what's going on, and therefore I know that you, who would question the government, are crazy, and mm-hmm. Because I do my homework, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
And the same thing with on the conspiracy end of it, the people that are really the truth seekers that have dug in and, like you said, had those moments at the beginning of trying to figure out every single thing that they could figure out, except they did that through the avenue of, you know, Tsarian and David Icke and Jordan Maxwell, and didn't really venture much out of it. Then they, and the undertowing current that's not really there on the surface, but if you watch enough of it and you dig out, and that's why they provide every bit of truth, and the whole truth movement is essentially encapsulated in everything that they say. You can understand everything about, oh, the Federal Reserve and 9/11, and I always use those two, but basically it goes a lot deeper than that, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
But you can hear all that there. You never really have to go out of house, though, with those people. And I'm not saying it's focused on those men, because it's not. It's a lot bigger than that. And but they always have the slow propaganda too. And that anti-Christian sentiment is what they get. That's the glaze over eyes that you get from those people. So, and those things are going to combine. And as you know, I believe they'll combine with this whatever event of some new world religion
mm-hmm.
that will satisfy
exactly.
everybody.
And I don't know if you saw it today in the news or not, but you've been reading about Schwarzenegger, I'm sure, and about all the bizarre stuff that he's been insisting being taught in the public school system in California. You know, the kids can pick their own gender and use whatever bathroom they want to use and treat homosexuality as fine and normal and teach it. And so a lot of people pulled their kids out of school and had been homeschooling them, a lot of Christian parents. And apparently the Supreme Court in California today said, unless you are credentialed as a teacher, it is illegal for you to homeschool in California.
Wow.
Yeah.
See, it's they're squeezing tighter and tighter and tighter. The only place that a Christian can go pretty soon is going to be the woods. I mean,
exactly.
And nobody seems to understand that. They think that Christians are running the world and they're all oppressing them, trying to get them to be Christians. And at the same time, they can see with their own eyes that there is no place for Christians to go anymore except the woods. It's going to be illegal if they could. No more freedom of religion, and nobody seems to understand it.
Exactly.
But and it's
no, it's extremely frightening, and it's you know, I have my son in a private Christian school, and you know what? Sometimes I think it's harder to be a Christian among religious people than among heathen. You know?
Yeah, I can agree with
that. And he's a great kid. His mother's, you know, this tinfoil wearing hat woman, and we talk to each other, and he's very outspoken, and he'll talk about things in school that, you know, where are you coming up with that? We've never heard that, but he's insistent. No, you need to do your research. This is true. My mom told me about it, and he's been great about it. But he gets a lot of flack from speaking up in a Christian school about what's going on, because he's not being patriotic, or what he's saying is out in left field, or how can you say this about Washington, D.C.? Don't you know we take the 8th grade class to Washington, D.C. every year so they can see our Christian heritage? You know, there's a lot of blindness among the Christians, and then there's a lot of hatred toward Christians from the outside world, and so the true church really is pinched in the middle. We're pinched between religion and heathenism. We really are. It's like we don't belong to either camp.
I know. But I think that that's kind of what Jesus' ministry was about too, you know, so I don't feel too bad about it.
Exactly. And see, he refused to fight the beast. He refused to allow his disciples to take up the sword. He said, no, you don't do that. You don't fight the beast. You love your enemies.
But in a lot of people's critique of that, they would listen to them and say, that's New World Order. That's where they get you. You know, that's how you're supposed to lay down and you know, fight the New World Order. But I think I would suggest to you that Jesus' ministry did and is continuing to beat him. It was Jesus' ministry that called out every single thing the New World Order was going to do. And
exactly.
That's why they had to discredit it right now. His way defeats them. Absolutely,
exactly.
Completely drains them of any power over you or me or anybody. Spiritually speaking, he can't. And physically, that translates literally to their entire power base, and that's why they had to discredit it. You think that we're going to beat them with swords, but Jesus had to be discredited by them. The Bible, everybody had to be discredited because he was the most anti-Illuminati New World Order guy in the world. You know. And
absolutely. And that's what happened when Daniel was taken captive by Babylon. No matter what he went through, he just took it and said, look, this may kill me. If it kills me, it kills me. But I'm not going to bow down. If it kills, but he didn't raise the hand against it. He didn't take the sword against it. He just relied on God to see him through it, knowing that whether God allows me to live or I die here, I believe what I believe, and I think that he is something that we're supposed to emulate. I think the lives that we see laid out for us are the pattern that we're supposed to follow.
How you see the world in light of these mm-hmm. new events. And the problem is that a lot of people plug their paradigm in and are left with a lot of things that don't fit into that paradigm, whether they admit it or not. And it was the same way. That was when I first started doing the show. I had a paradigm. I had an essential framework that I think was, you know, solid, yet there were a lot of things that didn't make sense as what I currently understood and believed about everything. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of those people are just still so hungry. It's like, I feel like it's like, you know, the food now doesn't have any nutrients. People are starving to death, although they're eating a lot of food because it has no nutrients. And then they put it in the microwave, it loses the rest of its nutrients, and they're starving to death with full stomachs. And I feel like that's what's happening with the truth movement, that we're getting so much, quote, truth, and none of it is true. I mean, no, it's true, but that's why when it started all coming together here recently, I guess, in the last maybe 6 months or something, and it all started, I think, when I really understood the Nephilim part of it. You know, when that all plugged in, it made ancient history fall into place. You know, all that clicked, and then it started to understand when you plugged in my case, Russ Dizdar to that whole thing to add to the whole other system and how it's actually being run. And a lot, and at that point, almost all of the big questions started coming into place. You know, all the big wonders about, you know, psychic abilities and all this stuff, and, you know, all this stuff. So I don't know.
And not just for you. I've seen it in ministries across the board. I mean, it's like it was one of those things that God was waiting for the right time to kind of unseal it and let it go. And I see it on site after site after site of, wow, this is what's going on. We've never seen this before. We've never understood this before. It was meant for now, because what would have happened if a hundred years ago this information would have been understood? You know, people would be driving themselves nuts for the next century trying to figure it out and delve into it, whereas now we can make sense of it. Do you see what I'm saying?
I think so. Now, I know certainly a lot of the stuff that I feel is sealed up, you know. I know it says that about Daniel's prophecy, does it say that in Revelation when it said these prophecies would be sealed up until the time of the end, or paraphrasing?
In Daniel's, I believe.
Well,
but they're unsealed in Revelation, yeah.
But you know, it really makes me. It is, I think, prideful for a lot of people to think that they have this scenario of end times thing figured out, and a lot of these end times, you know, prophecy people have got it down, like you were saying at the beginning, you know, and if it's got to happen like this and this and this, when I think it's really selling God short in that sealing up process.
And you've got to be willing. You got to be willing once you're shown, as things unfold, no, your preconceived ideas are wrong. You got to be willing to say, you know what, I was wrong. I need to look into this some more, and that's being humble. You know, that's just deciding I'm going to just set myself aside, and if the truth is what I want, then I need to set aside my belief system here. And just because it's always been preached, just because it's always been taught, doesn't mean it's so. I mean, this is a funny story. The denomination we used to belong to, apparently 20 or 30 years ago, they held a conference about the end times. Do you know how they decided the scenario of how things are going to play out? They took a vote. Now, how in the world that seemed to be the thing to do to a room full of pastors is beyond me, but that's what they did.
Yeah.
And as hilarious as that sounds to us now, 20 years ago, somehow it made sense. We have to be willing to keep digging and keep looking, and when we're corrected, you know, say, okay, I need to step to the left here because the path I was on was not quite where I thought I was going. It wasn't right. We need to humble ourselves and be willing to say, you know, I was wrong.
And especially in something like Revelation, where it's telling you this is important, you know, but you're not going to get it, you know. And it was obvious for a long, long time that wasn't for us. Okay, that's really weird. I know that there's something there. It seems like it's very, very important, but I don't get it, you know? And that was how everybody seemed to take it for a while. I'm sure there was great scholars all throughout history that had, you know, really good opinions on it, you know, really led to understand what they could. But like I was saying, I think it really does sell God short that he couldn't seal something up. And I think there are indicators of that as like the rapture. I think that it should be a major red flag to us that there is a division. About half of good Bible believing Christians that don't disagree on anything else, and to say that either one of them doesn't really understand what they're talking about is just selling both of them short, and primarily selling God short, that he couldn't I just don't think that we got all the facts yet to make, but I think
absolutely right. At this point, this is where I am. We're in his hand. If that's literally in his hand out of here, fine. But if it's in his hand while we're here, we're in his hand while we're here. I mean, we have to depend on his protection and his rescuing us may be literally supernatural rescuing us here where we are. Enemies don't see us. You know, there's so many stories about Jesus walking through a crowd of his enemies and they couldn't lay a hand on him.
Right.
You know, it may be the same situation we have, that we are literally supernaturally protected.
And I think that one critique that I hear so much as the primary reason why it can't be true is that everybody throughout history has gone through trials and tribulations and they weren't taken up. I'm like, that's not an argument against this. We're talking about the end of the world here. We're talking about the final judgment. There is no preceding thing to compare this to. This is not like famines or pestilences or wars. This is something new. And to say, God wouldn't, that's not a reason, is what I'm saying. That's just kind of silly.
Let me just say this. I'm hopeful that that is what happens, but I think that we need to be in so much prayer and in the Word so much that if it doesn't happen, we can literally turn on a dime in our thinking process and realize what has happened and move with it, if that makes sense.
Oh,
in other words,
yes.
Okay, this has come down. No, we weren't raptured. Now I understand, and this is where we're going to go from here.
I agree.
Rather than insisting on, well, no, the rapture has to happen first, and it hasn't happened, so what I'm seeing must not be true.
Right, or the 7-year peace agreement must be signed before I start to, really care about this or start going to church more or whatever, exactly. I think that, as a, some of these people feel like they've protected themselves in their own knowledge of, quote, Bible prophecy by reading enough Hal Lindsey or something,
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what I started, when I was pretty much, when I first started reading about Bible prophecy and stuff, I figured I had it all figured out. I wasn't going to be deceived, because I knew what to expect. But obviously that's changing every second.
You know what? Isn't it amazing how we can look at it and it tells you that it's been sealed up and it tells you that the elect, if possible, will be deceived, and yet somehow make ourselves believe that we're not part of that crowd.
Right.
Like you said, we really think God can't seal it up. We really think God can't make things happen so that the elect are deceived. Well, if the Word says it, then it's going to be
right. Or why he wanted to seal it up is that's another question. I mean, well, I would be willing to bet that he had a really good reason for not saying it. And laying it all out and sealing it up so that even, us looking for it wouldn't be able to tell until we need to tell it. Because I think that the Bible has a lot more to say to people after, during the tribulation period. Whether or not we're here, whatever, I'm not saying that necessarily, but it's got a lot more work to do. And it's like Bible 1 and then Bible 2, the sequel, is going to be a whole nother meaning for a whole nother group of people.
Does it ever get weird in your mind when you are reading about it, realizing you're reading about yourself?
Yeah. And what are you thinking in a particular instance?
Just the whole prophetic scenario of how things are playing out now. You start reading about it and you think to yourself, like when I turn to Revelation and I read about the crowd in heaven, and I think to myself, wow, he's looking at a crowd of people, and I may be one of those people he's looking at. You know, it's
sobering.
It is. It is.
I think of it. I was saying to Connie the other day when we were coming home from church. We started going to this church that I really like it. I've been there twice, and I've been so anti. I'm going to say anti-church, but didn't feel like I needed it. But then, of course, I was wrong about that. When I was led to this particular one, I realized, I think, anyway. We were coming home, and they kind of have this thing, theme, that I guess the last two times I've been there anyway, they were like talking about a new day and renewing the whole... anyway, the theme was to basically start to rely on God again, you know, oddly enough, the same thing we've been talking about, but... you know, I guess I've been pleading with myself and her to let's just really see this whole thing in context of where we are. I mean, it's a lot of those people are going to go home from church and they're going to be like, yeah, you know what? I'm going to really start praying again and really start, you know, really getting into it and renewed in that way. And that's mm-hmm. good. Yet me and you need to take it to a new level. We need to look at what was just said about that in context of where we are. I mean, we have to stop denying the fact that what was written about 2,000 years ago, the screaming about, telling us, pay attention when this happens, is happening right now. And we're talking about it in the context of days, you know?
Right.
And we can look out the window and it doesn't look like, you know, I didn't see actually we did see the moon turn red the other day, but besides that, you know, we're not seeing nuclear mushroom clouds in the sky, so it's hard. It's easy to think, well, you know, nothing's happening today, but it is. So we just need to apply those truths and realize how important it is. And really, I don't know. I guess I'm preaching to the choir.
You can't ever be self-complacent. You can't ever look at yourself and say, you know. You know, well, I know a whole lot more than other people do, and look how much I'm studying. So, you know, the pastor may be talking to them about doing this, but I'm already there. You know, I'm good. I'm already there. And for me, what's been amazing is you would think that the more you study, the more you learn, and I do. And yet the more I study, the more I realize how much I don't know. The more I study, I realize, wow, I just don't know it. You know, I think I do, you know, and I'll write down and take notes and then go back a couple months later and look at it and realize that even at the time when I thought that I understood it, I didn't. You know, it was just it was revealed in part to me, but it wasn't really everything that I saw when I studied it a second or a third time.
Mm-hmm.
There's always something more to know. And you can't get to the end of it, but that's okay because we have a long time to get to the end of it eventually.
Right.
So.